You're listening to Gaming Night Radio, the perfect podcast for your gaming nights. With reviews, news, and discussions, we celebrate the best of gaming and call out the worst. Along with your host, longtime gamer, master of the obvious, and grumpiest old man, Matt Ailey. What's going on? What's going on? What is going on? Welcome to episode 8 of Gaming Night Radio. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you taking the time to stop on by. Even though you don't know me, you've never heard of this podcast in your life, because it's only episode 8, but yet you've decided to take a chance on this podcast, and I'll tell you what, I'm not gonna let you down. Thank you for being here. Very much appreciate it. Now, we have a full meaty episode for you today. Now that the dust has settled, we'll be taking a look at E3, and I'll give you my thoughts on how it went and what the possible future could hold. But first, is Ghost of Tsushima coming to PC? And are we at risk of losing our purchased games in the future? That and more is coming at you, so lots of content to dig through, lots of questions for you. If you have thoughts, questions, topics, content you'd like to see in the podcast, you can contact me at gamingnightradio@gmail.com or, hey, find me on Twitter at GKRadioMan. Now with that all done and out of the way, let's dig into our first topic of the day. Have you ever worried that server shutdowns could ruin or straight up kill your games? Now, if you haven't, this story might give you something to think about. So might in Magic 10 or X, whatever people want to call it, Legacy, is a PC-only multiplayer fantasy role-playing game that was developed by Limbic Entertainment and published by Ubisoft and released back in 2014. So this game we're talking about today, it's not super old, not 10 years, not 20 years, not 15 years, only 7 years old. So this is pretty recent. As far as, you know, gaming goes, 2014 really isn't that far back. But Ubisoft has recently shut down the game's multiplayer servers. And when they did this, they said the single-player gameplay was still going to be playable. But that doesn't seem to be 100% of the case. So, there have been problems with the game ever since the server shutdown. DLC has become completely unplayable. Players cannot pass Act 1 of the game, and as of this recording, they are still selling the now-broken DLC, the Falcon and the Unicorn, on Steam. I just went to Steam because I was like, I can't believe this. They can't still be selling this if it doesn't work. And they're still selling it. And all these problems are due to these server shutdowns. So right now it's kind of unclear if Ubisoft even is aware of the problem. I mean, if they are, they need to pay attention and get on it, damn it! Because people paid money for this DLC. People paid money for the game. And if they do know about it, that's really effed up. That is really effed up. Especially, again, the fact that they're still selling the DLC. If they know what's broken and they're still selling the DLC, that is some really messed up shit. But as problematic as the potential greasy business practices on display here are, I think there's a bigger problem that we kind of need to talk about, that we kind of need to just bring a bit more awareness to as gamers who love to play games. And I don't know about you, but I'd love to keep playing my games in the future. Like, if I buy it, I'm not going to play it for a year, maybe two, and then be like, I'm never playing this game again. I love to go back into my library and continue to play the games that I love, that have had an impact on my life, that have incredible stories, incredible gameplay. I love to keep going back to them, even if they're older. So this, to me, has become a question of a bigger problem. The problem of game preservation across the gaming industry, especially as we continue to move more and more and more to an online connected gaming experience as we continue to move in the future. Games are increasingly becoming reliant on being online, and having those server connections. And this story that we got here is really a worst case scenario that's playing out. Because while it's fun today to have all that online connection, what will happen in 10 plus years when servers inevitably get shut down? Maybe it won't be in 5 years from now. Maybe it won't be in 10 years. But at some point, these companies are going to keep running servers for a 20-year-old game. At some point, it is inevitable that these servers will get shut down. And Back 4 Blood is a perfect example of a game that requires you to be connected online to play. Even if you're playing by yourself, you have to be connected online to play Back 4 Blood. So what happens when that game server is shut down? Will we no longer be able to play our favorite games? I mean, again, you know, I still play games from the original Xbox days. We're talking almost 20 years ago. Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2. I got a whole drawer just of old Xbox games that I still love to play. And because of the backwards compatibility, I can still play them on my current system. I still have an original Xbox up in a closet somewhere. I don't exactly know where it is. It might be, you know, at my mom's house up in a closet, getting all dusty and such. But, I mean, lots of people play games still beyond the original Xbox days. Like, from well before that. Easily, almost over 20 years ago now. And it's easy for them. Like, if you own it, the game, and you own the console, you can play it. It's that simple. But it's not that simple nowadays. With the connection of being online, it really complicates that whole simple process of if you own it and you own the console, you can play it. And it isn't that simple if these games are continually going to rely on servers and those servers become shut down. Because if those servers are shut down, even if you own it and the console, you wouldn't be able to play it. The game would be dead. And now multiplayer is inevitable. Like, that's going to happen one way or the other, right? We all know that about multiplayer games. If there's no server, there's no way for multiplayer or multiple people to connect. Other than, you know, maybe if there's some sort of landline split-screen service like in the old days. But that's not really the case. Like, once multiplayer servers get shut down, it's down. It's done. So we recognize there is a time limit to multiplayer games. Like, there's only so long this will be available. But single-player experiences shouldn't be affected by this, but again, as we're connecting more and more, they are. It is becoming that way. And again, perfect example, Back 4 Blood. If the developers don't put in something to future-proof this game, where you can play by yourself offline, where you can still have at least a single player experience, maybe not as fun as getting back together and playing with all your friends, right? Like, it's not going to be as fun. But if they don't do something, well, then that game in, you know, maybe 15, 20 years, when the servers do inevitably shut down at some point, will that game just be completely dead and you'll never be able to jump back in and experience it ever again? So that to me is a problem. And this story is a sign of that problem. The more and more we move into being connected, the more we're at risk of not being able to play these games. And while we understand multiplayer is inevitable, it's a little bit different. Like, single player, you should be able to keep going. But the way our future is headed and with connectivity with the internet on these games, it's looking a little bit questionable, and this game is a perfect example. This game is the perfect example. Again, that DLC that they have, that they paid for Might and Magic 10, is completely unplayable. You know, players cannot pass Act 1 of the game, so you can only play it so far, and that's just single-player content. That's a problem. And there's not much we can do about it, right? We're not the developers, we're not the creators, so there's not much we can do but speak up about stories like this and do our best to keep an eye on the situation. Like, Might and Magic 10 is only 7 years old. Only 7 years old and now unplayable. Paid for content is just gone. Yet, Ubisoft is still selling it for some godforsaken unknown reason. But not all game servers are going to last over a decade. So game preservation is something we need to really be thinking about and something the industry really needs to be thinking about, because it's important for consumer value, knowing that if you're putting, you know, $90, $70 on a video game nowadays, that is going to last. It's not just going to be able to be shut off one day and out of your control and you're not be able to play it. So it's important for consumer value. It's important for the history of gaming. So I just think developers and publishers need to do better while making these games for online. They need to start having plans in place for game preservation. They need to future-proof these games so we don't lose them to the inevitable march of time. What are your thoughts on game preservation? Are there games you still play from past generations? Let me know what's on your mind. All right, and with that, let's move on to topic number two for today. In what I consider is possibly some really good, great news here. Ghost of Tsushima may be coming to PC. Many gamers are speculating this may be the case, as the box art for the game has changed with the only on PlayStation sticker removed. So the box art for the game, the only on PlayStation sticker, has been removed. Now, the reason why people think this may be a sign that it's coming to PC is games that have recently been ported to PC, like Horizon Zero Dawn and Days Gone, have also had such adjustments to their box art. But it's also important to note that games that have a PlayStation 5 version and PlayStation 5 games themselves lack the sticker. So you kind of got these two options here, and time will tell which one is actually happening. So perhaps on one hand, Ghost of Tsushima is getting a PlayStation 5 version. And I imagine at some point it will get an update, at the very least. Like, it's a really beautiful game. I love Ghost of Tsushima. To be able to see it on PS5 would be very, very cool, even though I don't have a PlayStation 5 yet. Does anybody have one? It's like the freaking legendary unicorn around here. Man, like the Legend of the Falcon and the Unicorn. Is that what that DLC was called? Yeah, the Falcon and the Unicorn. It's like impossible to freaking find these things right now. I'm still working on it. But I'd be excited to see a PlayStation 5 version, a game that's really set for the PlayStation 5, especially Ghost of Tsushima, because it was already really great looking on the PlayStation 4. So PlayStation 5 would be very, very cool. Now, on the other hand, other than my excitement about PlayStation 5, even though I don't have one, on the other hand, something that I'm also very excited about is the idea that maybe it is coming to PC, which I don't think would be a bad thing. It's a great game, and the more people able to experience it, the better. Now, I know some people are going to be upset about that. No matter the platform, people like their exclusives to boost up their platform, their team, right? To go into other people's, you know, conversations, whether it's on Twitter, you know, especially on Twitter, to jump in and say, listen, PlayStation 5's the best, or PlayStation's the best because it's got this game, this game, this game, this game, and people from Xbox like to jump in, no, Xbox better because we have this game, this exclusive, this exclusive, this exclusive, this exclusive. It's just one of those things. Like, exclusives not only important for businesses to boost their platform and to help with sales, right? Because if you're selling a console, you need two really types of games coming in. You need to have those first party exclusives that you can really only get on your console, you know, to a certain degree. If you're looking at, you know, between the three consoles, you need those exclusives to draw people towards your console, towards your community, towards the ecosystem that you're creating on your console. But you also need that third-party game support coming in as well. So exclusives are really important. And, not only do they boost, again, that ecosystem, but people who have that console and, you know, they're the fanboys, they love to be able to shout out and say, hey, this is our exclusive. Now, I'm not really part of the console wars thing again. I've said before in past podcasts, I have all the consoles, you know, except the next gen ones. I got the Series X though, but I got PlayStation 4 and Nintendo, and I love them all for different reasons. They're exclusive, they're third party support, doesn't matter. I love them freaking all. And I think PC is a really great way to play games too. So while I understand exclusives are needed to have strong console sales, I do like the idea that PlayStation has been porting some to PC, and I love the idea that Xbox has really embraced putting its exclusives and the games that it creates and its first-party studio games coming to PC on day one. I love that they're supporting that. Because in my point of view, if you have something really, really great, why wouldn't you want to share it? Right? Especially games, especially stories. You lose nothing as a person by sharing them. Like Horizon Zero Dawn on PC. Listen, I played on PlayStation and it's still amazing for me. It doesn't matter if someone from PC can play it. It doesn't actually change my own experience with the game. Right? You lose nothing by sharing these great stories, by sharing these great games. You only gain more fans who love the same things as you do and who can share in the excitement of these stories and these love of these games. And why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want them? You lose nothing and gain everything. So I'm all for porting games to PC players. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. And if Ghost of Tsushima is coming to PC, I'm excited more players will get to experience such a superb game. I'm excited more people will be able to experience such a superb game. So hopefully, PC players, hopefully, you'll be getting a port for Ghost of Tsushima. And if you do, I highly suggest you play it because it is freaking awesome. So what do you think of Ghost of Tsushima possibly going to PC? Do you like your console exclusives to stay on the console? Or is it okay to go to PC? Let me know what's on your mind. All right, so we're going to take a quick break from our main topics of the day, and we're going to head into something I like to call Quick Fire News, which is really a quick breakdown of some of the news stories that have been happening in the gaming industry over the last week here. So without further ado, let's get into Quick Fire News. Attack of the Killer Door. A locked door in Call of Duty Warzone is instantly downing players who interact with it. A video was put up on Reddit showing the door in the salt mining facility instantly downing the players as they tried to open it. Now, if you're wondering if this is just a one-off, a number of players have spoken up on the Reddit post saying this is not just a one-off issue. So if you're in the salt mining facility, be aware and keep your reflexes sharp, or you just may become a victim of the killer door. In other Activision news, Activision Blizzard is still just the worst. CEO Bobby Kotick just got shareholder approval for a $155 million bonus payout. Damn, that must be nice. The payout comes from a clause in his 2016 contract that activated when Activision Blizzard's stocks skyrocketed thanks to the pandemic. Not actually thanks to Bobby Kotick. But don't worry guys, Activision cut Bobby's 2021 salary by 50% to a measly $875,000, and also reduced his annual target bonus 50% to a potential bonus of only $1.75 million. I mean, this guy is really gonna be slumming it now. So, sucks to be Bobby. In other news, Activision Blizzard's employees are raking it in with great job insecurity and salaries that are less than 1/3 of 1% of Bobby's. Some even killing it by making less than $40,000 a year while living in Southern California. Also, the 800 employees laid off in 2019 after a record-breaking $6.49 billion year are still laid off. Has the internet learned nothing from WandaVision? A new internet conspiracy theory has taken the gaming community by storm. Blue Box Game Studios is believed to actually be run by Hideo Kojima, and the game they are making, Abandoned, is actually a new Silent Hill game. Now, Blue Box has repeatedly stated they are not working with Hideo Kojima in any way. Most recently, game director Hazan Karaman made a video showing that he is in fact real, a human being, and again stated they are not making Silent Hill or working with Kojima. But the internet loves to hold on to a good conspiracy theory, and of course this denial means it's actually real, right? Right? He's denying it, so it means it is actually real. So all in all, there is no way this is going to end well. There's going to be a lot of pissed off people when they learn it was Agatha all along. Little WandaVision joke for you there, if you get it. If you don't, get out of here. Just. Moving on. The Borderlands movie has wrapped. The announcement came with a Twitter post from Gearbox showing audiences their first look at Claptrap, voiced by Jack Black. While there is no release date, it's expected to come out next year in 2022. Now, here's hoping it won't be a complete train wreck like the majority of video game movies. But it does have Jack Black, Kevin Hart, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Cate Blanchett, so it can't be all bad, right? Right? Avengers! Shit the bed! Again. Marvel's Avengers is a game that, as my good friend Green used to say, never ceases to f*** itself. The newest self comes in the form of a recent update that introduced a bug that is showing players' IP addresses. Jesus! Like, what do you even say at this point? This game should probably just be scrapped, and someone else should try. You know, someone who knows how to not visibly show IP addresses in their games. Jesus. Come on, how do you screw up an Avengers game? Apparently, just like this. Coming out this week, Dungeons & Dragons Dark Alliance is out today for all platforms except for the Switch, as well as Olympic Games Tokyo is out for all platforms, that's today. Now on the 25th, you have Mario Golf Rush, which is releasing exclusively on a Switch, which is a game I'm very excited to play. Also coming to Switch the same day, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2. Also on the 25th, Scarlet Nexus is releasing for all platforms, again, except for the Switch. Coming to Game Pass today, Sea of Thieves, a Pirate Life update with Captain Jack Sparrow, as well as D&D Dark Alliance. And that's it for this week's Quick Fire News. Now on to our final topic. I just want to state this before we get into it, because we're going to be talking about E3 here, my thoughts on it, my feelings on the show, and, you know, the potential future of where they could go from here. Now, I'm not trying to be negative here, but I'm always going to give it to you guys straight. Right? I'm like that grumpy old man. I'm not trying to be negative, but I'm just going to tell you straight how it is. I'm just going to tell you how it is. Now, this does not undermine or undervalue your own opinion, okay? So if it's different from mine, like, that's okay. This is just my point of view, and it's no more valuable than yours. Especially because I cannot speak, so you probably already have an advantage over me. Let's get into my thoughts here. So overall, for myself, I felt E3 was a considerable disappointment. I felt we had really two strong shows in the whole thing. And, you know, maybe like a couple half shows and that sort of thing. But we really had two strong shows when we looked at the whole expanse of what E3 really is and what we got in that 4-day span. Xbox, obviously, and Nintendo. The rest range from all right, which is they had a presentation, you know, to just, what is this? Like, Take-Two showed up with a Skype presentation. Bandai Namco had a single game there. Like, what is this? How is this a presentation at all? So, like, I'm trying to find the words here already. I'm already just like, ugh, because I am so disappointed in what we got this year. And it's not like, ugh, I just don't like the games. Just the effort that was put into the presentations. Because you know it, I know it. We put in effort to come and watch the shows and watch the presentations, and we take time out of our day to sit down. You take time out of your day to sit down and watch these things. Some of you maybe take time off work to come sit down and support these companies, and they just bring to the table nothing. Just nothing. No real good announcements, not really solid gameplay. They just bring nothing. Like, the lack of effort that's put into these presentations, that's kind of what I'm upset about. And even the communication. Like, if you're Bandai Namco and you're just showing one game on the E3 schedule, that shouldn't say, like, the Bandai Namco presentation. It should say Bandai Namco one game, you know, and have the title of that game. Kind of like WB did, right? They did Back 4 Blood. So you go into that presentation, you're not expecting Batman, you're not expecting Gotham Knights, you're not expecting Mortal Kombat, you're expecting Back 4 Blood, and that's it. Communication was very clear. The rest of them, not so much. So I was really disappointed in that effort of bringing things to the presentation, and even just this simplest effort of communication, of respecting your time, is what frustrated me and really disappointed me in the end. Like, I was rooting for E3. If you go back and watch the first episode of this podcast, I'm like, hell yeah, E3, man, whoa, let's go, I'm so excited, I am hyped as hell, let's make it happen, baby, woo! I mean, because I have such fond memories of it. And it was just a huge bummer to come into the E3 week and see this. So while I was very excited about E3, and I was like, there's no way E3 is going anywhere, after this year, I'm thinking, well, maybe there are some better options that can provide the same value as E3 used to provide to us as the viewers and us as the gamers who are passionate and want to be there, but also to the developers, also to the publishers as well. So let's just quickly go through a couple things here before we get into kind of the future, what that could possibly hold. Let's talk about, you know, what I liked and what are some of the problems with things I didn't like specifically. You know, I kind of summed it up a little bit there, but let's get into a little bit of specifics. So what I liked, pretty much the same things everyone liked. Xbox and Nintendo's presentations were really, really strong. They showed up to this thing. They brought trailers, they brought some gameplay. They did a really great job of showing us what the future has in store for their systems. So I thought both presentations were really, really strong and done really well. Also, I do have to say Devolver Digital was pretty funny. This is the first time I went on and watched their presentation. I usually don't because I'm not a PC gamer. I don't play a lot on PC, mainly because my PC is a big old pile of crap. Like, even doing this podcast is a struggle for my PC. It's like, why are you doing this to me? It's always just trying to murder itself all the time. Like, I just push it way too hard. Just make it do things it probably shouldn't, you know? So my PC is a piece of crap, so I haven't really been to PC playing. Hopefully I'll be getting an update very soon. But I love Devolver Digital, and I think a lot of people really did too. They had a lot of funny comedic skits, and again, while the gameplay wasn't super great, and some of the games looked interesting, it wasn't the strongest showcase of games, but how they patched it together and presented the whole presentation made it not a waste of your time. You know, it was funny, it was entertaining. They didn't give two shits about looking stupid. They just went 10,000% in, and it was amazing. I really, really loved their presentation. So those were the things I liked. Honestly, like, that was it. Xbox, Nintendo was really strong. Devolver Digital was pretty funny. Ubisoft had a presentation. So that's something. That's something. Okay, so let's get into the problems. Because that already, you know, that already touches on the problems. Few were actually ready to show anything at E3. And that was mainly due to COVID. Right? Like, which is fair. Which is fair. I'm never going to hold COVID against these guys. You know, I'm never going to say, you guys should have had more stuff to talk about. You know, there just wasn't anything much. And again, you're assuming that's coming down to COVID. But then again, it brings up that question of why are you even there? If you have nothing to show, why are you there? And that also brought up another thought question, like, well, maybe I guess the ESA, the people who run E3, you know, there might have been some backroom conversations that just we weren't obviously privy to. Obviously, there's a lot of those in the gaming industry and emails that go back and forth. But I wonder if they had something to do with even, I don't know if forcing's the right word. Because I don't know if a body like that can force developers and publishers to show up. I mean, maybe they can. But it kind of felt like these people just had to be there, had to show up for E3, even though they had nothing to show. And that led to some really disappointing presentations. So I'm not 100% sure if these guys showed up on their own, like, just excitement to be there at E3, because it didn't feel like they put that effort in, or they had to do it. Like, it doesn't feel like it was something they wanted to do. It has all the signs of, like, you know, I didn't want to do this presentation or this homework, but I kind of did some half-assed version of it. There you go. No, that's kind of what it felt like. So, honestly, when you're coming into a lot of presentations like that, when the majority are like that, I mean, when you got Xbox and Nintendo bringing in heat and bringing in their stuff that all their studios are working on, you know, all these other publishers also have decent amounts of studios that they could be showing something, but they didn't. So it just kind of felt at the end of the day like E3, whether intentionally or unintentionally, just wasted my time with what they had to show. They spread it out over 4 days, and I'll get into this point in a sec here. They spread it out over 4 days, and they just didn't have the content. They just didn't have the presentations to actually make it 4 days long. Another one of the problems is the website wasn't working right off the top. I remember trying to, because I signed up for E3, they want everyone to sign up, and not everyone, but whoever wanted to sign up, and the press to sign up. And, like, I tried to get on there in the app the first day, and it wasn't working. I tried to get onto the browser, because I thought maybe it's my app, and it wasn't working. Now, I did go back later on for a little while, but I didn't spend a lot of time in there, so I can't even give you a full, honest review of what this, you know, what kind of app they had set up there and program they had set up online. But from what I found was it was just, like, it didn't have value. There was no value to it. You know, you go to, like, the different developer booths and publisher booths that are there, which there wasn't really any of any note, and it's not like you could, you know, gameplay demos or, you know, different things. It was just kind of like information and a couple videos. Like, it just wasn't anything of any real value that would say, hey, spend your time on our E3 portal, go check out these things. Like, there just wasn't anything to actually check out. It wasn't a very good representation as if you were actually there. Because if you're actually there, a lot of these booths and stuff have different demos and stuff for you to try out and play and check out and different information, and that just wasn't present here. A lot of the people I follow online who are in, you know, the media or social media influencers, it just say, like, well, you know, what was the point of that? Like, I still don't know to this day why I had to sign up for this, because a lot of them still got in contact with the developers they needed to without having going through the app. So it just seemed like, you know, A, it wasn't working day one, and that, to me, is a problem. Because if your only app is E3, if your app is E3, and its only job is to be working when E3 is on, like, that doesn't seem like a hard bar to hit, you know? Let's make sure it's working on E3 day, and it just wasn't. So that was one of the other problems that I found there, too. E3 also doesn't bring, especially this year, a unique value to developers and publishers that Summer Game Fest couldn't, or even their own online presentations. And that's why you see more and more developers and publishers moving away from E3, because they're not bringing that unique value, right? Like, E3 used to be like a press junket kind of thing, right? It was just for the press to show up and for these developers and publishers to show exactly what they're working on, but not to just every Joe Schmo out there, to the media. That was the point, to get their message across so the media, whatever influencers, could also continue to spread that message. But now, you know, everything's very public. Games, game publishers and developers continually put up updates online. So you're constantly getting these different updates for these games and getting information. It's not as it used to be when the internet wasn't as full of information and thing, you know, the lines of communication were less closed off. Well, I still think media and influencers are really important to target that message and to get your message across. Again, why so many brands use them and team up with them. you know, Xbox doesn't need to necessarily do that. And E3 doesn't in itself bring anything unique that, again, something like Summer Game Fest couldn't. Right? A Summer Game Fest has their own thing that they've been doing. They did, you know, last year, and it was spread out really far apart. But, you know, if Summer Game Fest decided to take a model that was similar to E3, like, E3 doesn't have anything to really counter that. And even the developers and the publishers doing their own online presentations nowadays can work really well. Last year, I was all against it. And even just a couple days ago, just before E3, I was completely all against this idea. I was like, no, I do not want to watch online presentations because there's something missing from that, right? There's that live audience, there's that energy, there's all those things that are kind of missing. And then I watched Xbox Extended with Paris Lilly as they broke down all the different games and had developer interviews. And even the Xbox presentation at E3, like, you could feel that energy was still present. So however they put it together, however they filmed it, you know, however, you know, they designed that presentation, it worked really, really well. And I wasn't actually missing anything. I wasn't feeling like anything was missing. Their presentations were just top notch. So if Xbox can do that and doesn't need E3 and everyone's still gonna show up, well then what value is E3 bringing to Xbox or to Nintendo? And obviously PlayStation is way out of there. They're just not even around. They're not even in the same time span. They're like, we're out of here, we don't care. So that's another big problem for E3, and especially this year, they didn't bring anything unique to the developers, to the publishers, to actually justify those publishers wanting to be a part of E3. Last but not least, one of my biggest problems, poor planning, mismanagement. And the biggest sign of this is, again, having that 4-day stretch of E3. This would have been a much better show, a much better E3 event as a weekend event. Saturday, Sunday, done. You have 2 days, you have, you know, 3-4 strong presentations, you have Xbox, Nintendo, maybe Devolver Digital for PC, throw Ubisoft in there because they actually had a presentation, and maybe a couple small ones there. But you cram it all in like a 2-day window, fewer presentations, have less filler, and really just bring your best and show that off. Because I think, again, one of the biggest problems was there's so much filler. There were so many things there that had nothing to show, nothing to do. So while we took the time to be there and be part of E3, it was just, there was no value there for us. There was no value there for the publishers. They brought in zero effort to this, you know, other than the ones that were good and the ones that were big, the rest seemed to just put in zero effort to putting in a great E3 show. And at least not communicating that. So something on a weekend where you're not spreading out everyone's time, where it's nice and tight, you have some really great content put really close together, would have made for a much, much stronger overall E3. And that's, again, my opinion. You may have different opinion on these things, and you may think I'm completely wrong, and hell, maybe I am. Because as I get into this next point, I just want to reiterate, like, I don't know shit. I don't know shit. This is just my opinion and from what I'm seeing sitting on my chair in my office. So those are the things that I kind of had problems with and I think are really working against E3. Now, for the future, there's kind of 3 scenarios that I'm seeing right now. And again, I don't know shit, so don't, you know, hold me to this, because it's probably just going to be the opposite of everything I say. It's going to be the opposite. But I'm thinking if E3 is going to recover, they're going to really need to put in a lot of work to bounce back from this. Because I think this event was really not great for them. Not great for them. So I think we're going to see a new version of E3. As the pandemic closes, maybe we'll get, hopefully, that physicality of E3 will come back. But again, I don't think it should be for just the general audience and the fans. I think physical E3 needs to be for press and influencers. So that's the first point. E3 physical, press, and influencers. So again, you're bringing that value back to publishers and developers. They can quickly get the press junkets done. They can get the press in and out, showing information, showing the games, getting them writing down the stuff, and, you know, kind of move on. Like, it's just a more focused event. Like, having the public there, I'm sure, is nice and causes a lot of excitement. But having Joe Schmo sitting at home playing video games, doing nothing else, come and play one of their demos does nothing to actually get the word out. Like, maybe he'll tell his couple buddies, like, dude, played this demo. It was pretty sweet, man. Like, it was the sweetest demo. But it's not going to actually help with their sales and getting the message of their game across. You have a press or influencer come in doing the same demo, and now you're reaching, you know, possibly thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people, depending on who it is, right? So there's a lot more value for the developers, for the publishers, to have the press and the influencers actually involved on the ground floor and making sure they're getting the most bang for their buck, like their most bang for their time, for being there and being present at E3 on the ground floor. So while physical E3 is good, I think it should be just for press and influencers, just to tighten that up. I think, though, for people who are still at home and who want to be a part of E3, there needs to be that more interactivity at home. We saw a couple demos come out this last week. Not necessarily from E3, mostly from the Summer Game Fest. Kind of games was putting it on. I saw it on Xbox, and I think there was some on PC and Steam as well. But different demos, right? Like, that's what we want to see with these games. I guess PlayStation also had one for the Square Enix game. Not Square Enix, Final Fantasy. That's the one. That's what that game's called. Chaos! I'm here to kill Chaos! You know, they had that demo as well. But we need more interactivity at home. Let us get hands-on with some of these games, and not just little indie games. Put out some demos for some of these bigger games that you would normally get to play at E3. Send them to the home so we can have more interactivity at home. That's really important. I also think they just need to, E3, a big thing, they need to improve these publisher relationships. Get back the big guns. Because EA already does its own thing. It's technically not part of E3. Even before the pandemic, it's technically not part of E3. Xbox is technically across the street from E3 and technically not part of E3. PlayStation is completely not part of E3. So while you know, these big publishers sometimes show up around the same time as E3, they're not part of it. And I think for E3 to really be relevant and have some value, especially for us as the viewers, they need to get back these big guns. So I think in the future, if E3 is going to survive, we're going to have to see a new future that is more focused on providing value, not just to the viewers and to the consumers at home, but also for the developers and publishers. Give them a reason, a focused reason, why they should be there, why they should care to be part of E3. Because again, if you don't, you know, that's a problem. Now, another thing I could see is E3 becoming irrelevant, fading away, and Summer Game Fest kind of taking its place. And not with the exact same platform. Maybe something that you're talking like one show a week or 2 weeks. One show every week or two. Because Summer Game Fest that we had last year was pretty rough. Like, there was really big separation. There was, you know, cool presentation, cool announcement. And then it was just like weeks and weeks and weeks till you kind of got the next one. And it just killed any sort of momentum. Now, if you had a Summer Game Fest that scheduled one show every week or one show every 2 weeks, that keeps the momentum going, separates it out a bit, keeps the information really focused. You know, developers and publishers aren't fighting for the spotlight. You get your chance to shine every once in a while. And I think they could also do the live audiences there as well, have that physical presence there for some of the presentations. And again, playable demos, online interactivity. I think that's really important, given our culture and how important online is for us. So that could be another thing I could see coming. Also, I could also see that neither really become prominent and everyone just does their own shit. Everyone just does their own thing online. They have their own presentations randomly whenever they want. Not really what I want to see, because there's no organization there. I'd love to see some kind of bigger organization like Summer Game Fest overseeing that, so that we can have scheduled content regularly in an organized manner. Like, that's just what I want to see. Not just randomly. Hey, we're doing this presentation. No, we're doing this presentation. Now, we're doing this presentation in 8 weeks. You know, just this huge gap and all over the place. I would love, you know, I'm really personally thinking Summer Game Fest may be the evolution of what is E3 and what it should become, but it's one of those things for the future. We'll just have to wait and see. As far as E3, I just think it face-planted hard this year. It was not a great year. And I think it may be tougher to come back. Like, you're losing publishers is one thing, right? Losing publishers like EA and PlayStation is one thing. And having Xbox separate itself even physically. But you put a bad taste in a lot of fans' mouths this weekend. Or this last E3 event. The people who watch. What value, then, do you have to pitch? Right? You piss off the people who watch your shows, who take part in E3, you put a bad taste in the fans' mouth, then what value do you ultimately even have to pitch to the publishers? So they may actually be in a worse place now than last year, even though E3 got completely canceled. It got completely canceled. This year's E3 was just pretty rough. And again, that lack of value for the viewers, just almost intentionally wasting your time. And the lack of value for the publishers and developers. Clearly, they can do these things. Xbox showed that. They had their E3 presentation, which was great. They didn't need E3 for that. They could have done that on their own. And clearly, when they did the Xbox extended gameplay thing, they did do it on their own without E3, and it was still super successful. So there's not even value for developers and publishers. And if you're getting rid of the value, if you're getting rid of the people and you're pissing them off, the people who watch, then there's even less value for them. So it's going to be an uphill battle for E3 to kind of pull itself back together and reinvent itself. But we'll have to see what the future holds. So what did you think of E3 this year? What did you like? What things didn't you like? What do you think the future holds? Let me know what's on your mind. And that's all for this episode of Gaming Night Radio. Let me know what's going on inside that melon of yours. What are your thoughts on today's topics? You can contact me at gamingnightradio@gmail.com or tweet at me at GKRadioMan. I'll be back later this week with a special Where Have You Been? Review of Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. So keep an eye out, or better yet, follow me on Twitter. This has been episode 8. I'm Matt Ayalu. Thank you for listening, and until next time, bye-bye. You've been listening to Gaming Night Radio, the perfect podcast for your gaming nights. With reviews, news, and discussions, we celebrate the best of gaming and call out the worst. Follow me on Twitter at GKRadioMan. Thank you for listening. See you next time.